Good morning, and thank you for that, Leif. Welcome to my presentation on asset protection, minimizing exposure, and preserving wealth. This is going to be an introduction on what asset protection is and the reasons for it, and what asset protection is not, what plans and techniques can work well for you, and what might get you in trouble if done wrong. I'm just going to be covering some basic protection strategies and ideas. There's obviously many, many different layers and ways to approach this topic. And this is scheduled as a introduction. If you would like to come by my table in the afternoon, we certainly could talk about your specific situation. All right, so first, the principles of asset protection. A lawsuit is filed in the U.S. every 1.3 seconds, and the purpose of asset protection is twofold. First, the deterrence to prevent people from suing you. The existence of an entity or a liability barrier that challenges your opponents and his attorneys forces the opposition's lawyer to evaluate risk and set their retainers high or their expectations low as to how much money they might be able to get out of a particular target. And once a case is filed, another principle of asset protection is exhaustion of the opponent's determination and resources. Chasing after a well-constructed and possibly mobile offshore asset protection structure is expensive for your opponent. Lawsuits with discovery, interrogatories, productions, depositions, motions, locations of assets, filing claims in multiple countries, hiring attorneys, paying fees. For example, in Nevis, you have to put up money before you can file a claim. So there are a number of ways that your opponent's determination and resources may be exhausted. And such an option may force him into settling or just going away. So who needs asset protection? The answer really is quite simple. Anybody with money, any high income, high net worth individual or family is a possible target of a lawsuit. I'll always remember when I first started as a lawyer, one of my clients got sued, and in our first meeting, he was very nervous. And I've always said that once you know you've arrived, once you get sued. Until then, until your first lawsuit, and until someone sees you as a target and attacks you, you really haven't arrived either in the world of business or finance. So, any high net worth individual is a potential target for a lawsuit and in need of asset protection. Then there's more specific examples. Anyone who may not be able to hide behind the asset protection barrier of a simple corporation. Those are usually physicians, attorneys, CPAs, accountants, enrolled agents, financial planners, stockbrokers, insurance agents, and architects. Those are typically people who their corporation is not going to provide sufficient protection against. It's quite easy to get to a lawyer for malpractice and get through his insurance and through his entity into his personal assets. Okay, and that's true even if a professional is acting as an employee of his or her company, he may not be able to hide behind that shield of limited liability and may get sued individually. So if you're in one of the these fields, or if your net worth is something that would make you a target, asset protection is something that you should consider. There are simple reasons for non-professionals to need asset protection. If you've got a residence where people might visit and injure themselves, if you have teenage children, especially those who are driving, if you've got a boat, automobile, other rental properties, any of these kinds of situations could result in liability. Why? Slip and fall in the home, party at your home and someone drives home drunk and gets in an accident, you could be liable. Children invite people over, teenage kids invite people over, drunk driving or other types of injuries. Negligent driving, defective conditions on the property, There's just all kinds of reasons that would that make you a target. So what asset should be protected? Obviously your business and your accounts receivables and your income. But then there's also the family home or condominium, your rental property. Any rental property should be in its own LLC, a U.S. LLC formed in the state wherever that property is located. And non-rental properties, real estate such as raw land, is a great target. IRAs can be taken offshore and protected, IRAs and all forms of retirement plans from prior employers. Stocks or mutual funds can be placed inside LLCs. Life insurance contracts, bank accounts or CDs, planes, boats, automobiles can all be protected at different levels. Business entities such as S-Corp or C-Corporation stock can be protected by placing the shares in the name of a trust, an offshore trust or an offshore corporation. Collectible items with any type of significant value can be protected. And inheritance, future inheritance from family can be protected. So what is asset protection? Protecting your assets through proper insurance and structures that make it difficult or impossible to reach those assets is the basics of asset protection. In other words, we're talking about putting a portion of your net worth behind some type of barrier. The more barriers and the further away the barriers, the greater protection. This allows you to level the litigation field, avoid being sued, or if you are sued, puts you in a much better bargaining position, or if you're going to play it hard, as a, just in a much better defense position. But more importantly, these are the questions I get a lot, and this is what I really want to stress, what asset protection is not. Asset protection is not escaping your current or reasonably foreseeable creditors. If you have a reasonable expectation of being sued in the near future, moving assets into an offshore asset protection structure is not going to be advisable or be something that's going to work for you. In other words, if you ran over somebody with your car yesterday and today you want to form an offshore trust and put assets in there, that's not going to work. Asset protection is not tax evasion. It's not intended to increase your U.S. tax obligations or decrease your U.S. tax obligations. You may have new filing requirements, but you shouldn't owe any additional tax. But more importantly, you shouldn't owe any less tax. So when somebody is talking to you, and you know, I hear this all the time with people forming corporations in Panama and things, they go to a Panamanian attorney and they ask about taxes, and the guy says, well, of course it's not taxable here, and they feel that that's sufficient. Well, yeah, it's not taxable in Panama, but it is and remains taxable as a as an account in the United States. Now, asset protection is not hiding assets. Offshore asset protection may prevent a lawsuit from occurring by providing a level of security and privacy. In other words, a basic asset search may not locate that property. But that's not really what asset protection is. That asset protection is not based on secrecy. It's based on putting up barriers to collection. That even if a creditor, and this may be hard to do, but even if a creditor was able to come up with a complete roadmap to your structure, they still would not be able to get to it. No, we're not talking about hiding or secrecy, even though privacy is a benefit. If somebody was able to work their way through the entire plan, they still would not be able to get to the assets. And then asset protection is not a total solution to estate planning. It should always be used in connection with if you're a U.S. resident, it should be used in connection with a U.S. living trust. And then there are strategies that will not work. Some people think that U.S. living trusts are asset protection tools. In fact, they have nothing to do with asset protection. They have everything to do with estate planning. A Revocable Living Trust is simply a way to distribute your assets and avoid probate. Yes, you are titling a piece of property or an asset in the name of the trust, in a living trust, but it doesn't provide any protection of that asset, and that's not its objective. Its objective is to avoid probate. In the United States, you are not able to give away assets but retain control of them. If you have a stock brokerage account and you give it away to a relative, but you're the one trading the stocks and you're really maintaining control over it, maybe taking money, adding money to it, taking money out of it, that's not going to be respected and for asset protection purposes, therefore it's not going to provide you any protection. Again, attempting to hide assets is not going to be efficient. You know, we're always starting with the assumption that there is a very well-motivated plaintiff who is going to use all of their resources and abilities to find your assets, and now once they've gone through that costly and time-consuming endeavor, they're still not able to get them with a properly constructed structure. Then there's a lot of scams and crap on the internet. Some are called business trusts, some are called pure trusts, some are called constitutional trusts or whatever. Everyone that I've ever seen is just complete crap. So I would avoid any of those. There are simple, straightforward asset protection plans that involve offshore asset protection trusts and offshore companies. Those are the only viable tools. Okay, so let's talk about last-minute transfers. What happens if you wait until you're sued to begin protecting your assets? Asset protection gets extraordinarily difficult. Courts have the power to go back and reverse a transaction that was done to defraud a reasonably foreseeable creditor. And this includes transfers to a family member, transfers of substantially all of your assets, little or no consideration transfers, you know, transfers with nothing in return. You know, you transfer an automobile to a family member for no consideration. That's likely to be reversed. Transfers that occurred after a suit was threatened and transfers that were made that result in your being insolvent are all items that are likely to be reversed if done any time near the event that is causing you to create the trust. So again, if you injure someone with your vehicle last week and now you want to transfer assets to family members, create offshore trusts and the like, it's not going to be respected. So, but what's going to happen? How is the judge how is the court, U.S. court, going to affect this? Well, financial transfers are just going to be reversed and you're going to be required to pay the money. If you have sent money offshore into an asset protection trust, a judge is going to give you an order to pay the money. Now, if you refuse, even if you say it's impossible or this I really transferred it irrevocably to trust or whatever it may be, the judge is going to have the ability to hold you in contempt of court until that money is returned and given to the plaintiff. And contempt of court means they're going to hold you in jail until the money is returned. And yes, this has happened on a number of occasions, so it is something that does occur in the United States. All right, next slide. So what is the first line of defense in an asset protection structure? Well, always maintain adequate levels of liability insurance. Know the exclusions of your policy and be sure your carrier is financially stable. As long as, and insurance is meant to resolve one-time claims and smaller claims. But increasing the premiums on your insurance too much may just make you more of a target for litigation than less of a target. And obviously, the premiums are being increased by the providers. You know, your costs are going up for this insurance. You may want to lower the limits on your policies to lower the premiums. And then obviously the insurance company may place a cap or a limit for certain specialties on how much insurance you're able to get. And again, if you place your limit too high, your insurance is going to make you a target for litigation instead of preventing or just being a protection. All right, and then there are obviously going to be a number of exclusions in any policy. For example, negligence or gross negligence is always going to be excluded. So if you do something inadvertently but that is grossly negligent, your insurance is not going to pay, where an offshore trust that was created well in advance of the issue arising is still going to give you maximum protection. And just remember, insurance works once. An offshore asset protection trust works forever. And when I say insurance works once, this means that you can maintain your policy for 15 years and you get sued once, your insurance carrier is going to pay and then they're going to drop you, or they're going to increase your premium so high that you can't afford to pay. We see this mostly with lawyers and legal coverages and things that you absolutely only get one shot at it. So make it a good one. If your insurance claim is going to be forced to pay any money, they are going to more than likely drop you as a high risk, and now you're out there on your own. Retirement accounts. Most employer-sponsored retirement accounts, 401ks, pensions, defined benefit plans, are exempt from creditors' collection efforts. They're not exempted from the IRS and certain types of creditor actions. And IRA type accounts are protected in some but not all states. So it is also possible to move your IRA offshore. This maximizes your protection while maintaining the tax deferred status of your account. Moving your IRA into an offshore LLC doesn't change its tax nature. It still remains a tax deferred or a tax exempt structure. Of course, and that still all the same rules are going to apply to you, that what you can do with it, how you can use it, what you can invest in it. But the point here is that it is possible to move your IRA into an offshore LLC and further protect it from creditors. Next is homestead exemptions. In some states, such as Florida, Oklahoma, and Texas, you have unlimited or nearly unlimited homestead protection. So your primary residence and all of its contents are protected from creditors. Some other states provide very little protection. California is about $75,000 to $125,000, depending. And this only applies to your home. So if your home is where you want to hold all of your cash in the form of art and collectibles and whatever it may be, and the equity in your real estate, if that's how you want to hold your investments, then a homestead in Florida or Oklahoma or Texas is good for you. If you want to do other things with your money, such as investment stocks, bonds, or whatever it might be other than your primary residence, then the homestead is not really going to be that beneficial. And then homestead does not protect against federal tax liabilities, or tax liabilities in the state where the property is located. So if you have a Florida tax debt or a IRS tax debt, your homestead is irrelevant. Homestead protects the primary residence, but not secondary homes. And most importantly, a homestead traps the value of the residence within your estate, within your property and within your estate. So if you die, the estate is the value of the property is going to go to the creditors and be eliminated from your estate. In other words, you're not able to pass it on because your creditors get their money. Also, you're unable to sell the property. So you are literally, if a creditor comes in with a $500,000 claim, you are not going to be able to sell that piece of property or do anything with it until you pay off that $500,000 claim. So a creditor can effectively lock up your real estate and also your estate. By estate, I mean if you pass away, and freeze it. So until if you're required to sell it or transfer it in probate or whatever it may be, you're going to have to pay that creditor. Additionally, there are some limitations on homestead exemptions. Most important is that you would have to be living to make use of the homestead exemption in, let's say, Florida or Texas. You would have to be living there 3 years and 4 months before filing bankruptcy. If a bankruptcy is utilized to protect you from creditors, you would have to be living there 3 years, 4 months prior to filing the bankruptcy to make use of the homestead exemption. So obviously that's a very long period of time. You know, of course, there is a seasoning period or time in offshore trusts as well. We kind of like to say that's about 12 months would be the best case scenario to have formed and funded an offshore trust before you have any type of problem. But really it's possible that you could have formed and funded an offshore trust and had a problem a month later, and the trust could certainly provide you maximum protection depending on the facts and circumstances of the case. But if regarding homestead, if you were doing it for bankruptcy purposes, if you are looking for more protection than the $125,000 basic level of homestead in states like Texas and Florida, then you would need to be living there in that home for 3 years, 4 months. Okay, transfer of assets. So our first option in asset protection is to get the target off of your back and get the assets out of your name and into an entity. This could be a onshore LLC, especially for onshore real estate. It could be a limited liability company that's offshore, or it could be a offshore irrevocable trust or an offshore asset protection trust. All of these things are moving the assets, the accounts, out of your name and into the name of the structure. And you want to be sure to separate each investment and business operation into its own entity. So you want to segment your assets as much as possible to diversify and limit your risk. So, for example, if you own several income-producing rental properties, each should be in its own LLC, its own single-member LLC. And for if you've got a commercial operation, which is maybe property management, you would want another LLC for that, for the cash flows and the property management side of the business. And then you've got some states, like Delaware, that provide series LLCs, and so it's possible that you can use series LLC to further segment your liability. It's kind of the general thought in the U.S. that Delaware will certainly respect their own series LLCs, but other states, maybe California, might not. So general thinking in the legal community is that series LLCs are good for businesses domiciled in Delaware or wherever they're formed, but maybe not so much for outside of that particular state. Okay, next slide. So this is our basic structure. We've got the owner, you. We've got our three LLCs. Each segments its property. So we've got one rental property here, we've got one business enterprise, and we've got one piece of undeveloped land, each in its own LLC. So if something happens on the rental property, the maximum liability or risk that you could be taking is the equity or value of that rental property. It's not going to spill over into your business operations or your piece of undeveloped land. Of course, there's other ways to mitigate the liability or risk inside that rental property. For example, if you can strip out equity out of your rental property and place that cash into an offshore structure, an offshore trust, or an offshore LLC, you're going to be minimizing risk, because if you were to lose a case and lose your rental property, there's not going to be much equity. And that's also going to reduce the target of that rental property. If there's only $20,000 in equity in the property because you stripped out most of the cash, then there's not really going to be too much motivation for someone to attack that structure. Domestic trusts. You know, you people who are searching on the internet might come up against U.S. Irrevocable trusts or domestic trusts. Maybe about 10, 15 years ago, they were kind of popular. They're created in Alaska and Delaware, and they're irrevocable trusts where the settlor, the creator, transferred the assets to the trust irrevocably, but then he gives up complete control over those assets. So there has to be an independent asset manager or trust manager that manages those assets for the benefit of the trust and or for the heirs of the trust. And the grantor, the settlor, cannot exert any control over those assets or the investment decision or any activities of the trust. Then further, it was found in U.S. court cases that those assets would have to be in the states where the irrevocable trust was created. So, for example, you couldn't have really California real estate placed in an Alaskan irrevocable trust because that asset was still in California and still subject to the California rules. So if you wanted, let's say, a stock brokerage account, it could be opened in Alaska. You would have to hire an independent Alaskan account manager. So basically, these things really went away after a couple of years of hype and good sales, I guess, for local lawyers. Because, A, most importantly, people weren't willing to give up control and over their assets. And then second, certain cases came down and requiring the assets to be in the state where the structure was created, so that really made them unpopular. So offshore planning, there's two levels of offshore planning. There's simple LLCs or corporations, and then there's offshore asset protection trust. Offshore asset protection is obviously far more difficult to attack. Assets are beyond the jurisdiction of the home country. Any litigation would have to involve local lawyers who are certainly not going to work on contingency like a U.S. lawyer might. And great expenses are going to be incurred in trying to go after these structures. But these offshore structures are traps if you are unadvised and uninformed for the tax filing obligation. Again, offshore asset protection should not be increasing or decreasing your tax debt or your tax bill at the end of the year, but it is going to increase the number of forms that you need to file, and it would certainly be my opinion as a tax guy that you should hire a tax professional to prepare your structure and to prepare any forms at the end of each year. So an offshore structure is going to be an excellent opportunity for somebody who wants to do it right, but filled with pitfalls for somebody who does it wrong. So maybe you don't need to hire me, but you certainly need to hire somebody who is experienced in the U.S. transaction side of offshore asset protection to do your structure if you're a U.S. citizen or resident. Your taxes and your other obligations aren't going to be controlled by the country where you incorporate or form your structure. They're going to be controlled by your home country. So hiring a professional licensed and experienced in your home country is going to give you the best results. Okay, so the limited liability company, the first level of defense, and sometimes mixed with an asset protection trust. I prefer Belief and Nevis for my LLC structures, though there are a number of good jurisdictions. I prefer Belief and Nevis because they allow for single-member LLCs. These are the simplest to report for U.S. purposes, and other LLC structures are created more as partnerships rather than single-member LLCs, and this can make a very big difference in your annual filing requirements and tax obligations when it comes to the United States. So one of the most sophisticated LLC statutes is going to be in Nevis, followed closely by Belief. They're going to be great for holding IRA and retirement accounts. They're going to give you protection from charging orders. They are going to allow you to manage the assets within those structures. In other words, the an IRA could be the owner of the retirement account, and you could be the manager of the retirement account legally, legitimately, for U.S. retirement account planning purposes. So that would mean that you would be able to control those assets within the LLC. Remember, we were just talking about the difficulties of U.S. irrevocable trust. Well, that's fixed in an offshore world where you are allowed to be to maintain control and management of these structures. All right, and again, Belize and Nevis allows for single-member LLCs, where other countries that have LLC laws require more than one member. And you're not going to have any real record-keeping or corporate formality requirements with these LLCs in Belize and Nevis. You're going to be allowed to transfer these entities, change its domicile anytime you choose, and there's not going to be any corporate tax, income tax, withholding stamps, withholding tax, asset tax, or any other types of taxes or fees associated with these LLCs in Belize and Nevis. Now, remember, again, we're not talking about U.S. tax. We're talking about tax in these two countries. This is different than, let's say, you form a corporation in, say, Hong Kong, which is also a popular asset protection. You're going to be required to file tax returns each year. You may have some tax on capital gains. You're going to have accounting and reporting requirements in Hong Kong. But in Belize and Nevis, there is none of that. You are just free to pretty much act as you will. And, of course, you're still responsible for tax in the United States. But you're not going to have any formalities or payments due in Belize or Nevis. Foreign trusts or offshore asset protection trusts combine the estate planning and maximum asset protection. An offshore corp is great for operating a business and for basic asset protection, and that can also be combined with an offshore asset protection trust for another layer of protection. In other words, we can create a offshore asset protection trust for you, and then in that trust we can place your offshore corporation, which is operating your business, and that is going to provide an extreme level of protection and privacy. And these offshore trusts are going to provide other benefits. You know, we've said privacy, but they're also going to allow Americans and others to gain access to international markets, investment diversifications. You're going to be able to hold money in just about any currency that you choose. There are going to be a barrier to litigation. Hopefully they can prevent litigation, but if somebody still comes after you, it's going to be extremely costly for them, and they will be much more willing to settle. And then finally, they are intended, and they best protect liquid or movable assets, things that you can place outside of the United States, such as brokerage accounts, cash, foreign real estate, not really intended for U.S. real estate. To remind you of tax issues of offshore asset protection, international asset protection trusts are for asset protection purposes only. They do not decrease or increase your U.S. tax obligations. Trusts are funded with after-tax money. That's not true of IRAs, but they are funded with after-tax money, money that you've already taken a salary and usually paid tax on. Now, we do have some people who are living and working abroad at this presentation, so if you have taken a salary, your $95,000 in foreign earned income exclusion, that is after-tax money, and that can go into an offshore asset protection trust, money that's already been reported in one way or the other on your U.S. tax return is after-tax money, no matter the amount of your tax bill, and can go into an offshore trust. Now, and then the other caveat is offshore corporations. If you're operating a business outside the U.S., you take your salary, the foreign earned income exclusion amount, then your offshore corporation might be able to hold pre-tax business income, might be able to defer U.S. tax on retained earnings, in other words. In this case, that money cannot be transferred into the trust, but the offshore corporations, the shares of the offshore corporations, might be held by the offshore trust. So this hasn't really changed our tax bill, but it has affected the asset protection component of the offshore corporation and the offshore tax structure. And then money earned by a trust is usually passive income. It's going to be investment, capital gains, etc. So this is not going to qualify for the foreign earned income exclusion. Money inside a trust is not going to qualify for the foreign earned income exclusion. It's going to be capital and passive in nature. It's not going to be ordinary business income. So my two favorite jurisdictions for trusts are going to be Belize and Cook Islands. Remember, Nevis, that was for LLCs. My favorite jurisdictions for trusts are going to Belize and Cook Islands. Both have a long history of trust administration and case law. Cook Islands was, in fact, the creator of the offshore asset protection trust environment. So they have certainly the longest and the most tested history. Both have professional counsel and trust administrators. Fees are typically based on work and time spent, not on the size of the trust. In other words, you shouldn't be incurring a percentage fee on your trust. Control of these trusts can be done through a Belize LLC or a Nevis LLC that would be added to your trust, with you as the only member and the only signer on the bank account. So that's how you maintain control, is that you transfer the assets into your Cook Islands or Belize trust, then you form a offshore LLC management company, then the trust transfers those assets to the LLC management company, and now you are managing the assets for the benefit of the trust. Then if you become under duress, you can, at your option, transfer those assets back to the trust and go under the control of the administrator and get those out of your control and out of harm's way. Going on to the next slide here. Okay, so here is a sample offshore structure. We have the grantor, or settlor. He or she transfers assets and money to a Belize trust in this scenario, and that Belize trust is managed by a Belize LLC. Now we've got the beneficiaries would receive money from the trust if the settlor grantor passes away. And then you see below it, we've got an IBC, an offshore corporation that is operating a business. Those shares are held by the Belize trust. And then we have a domestic LLC that is holding U.S. real estate, and that domestic LLC is held, the shares are held by the Belize trust. And then we've got bank and brokerage accounts. Those are all held in the name of the Belize LLC, not the Belize Trust, but the Belize LLC. So you can maintain control and management over those assets. Okay, let's talk about Panama for a minute. Panama is my favorite place to operate an offshore business. Maybe not my favorite place for international asset protection, but they do have a very unique and interesting hybrid vehicle called a foundation. Panamanian foundation is kind of a cross between a corporation and a trust. It is not permitted to engage in business. It can't make profits. It can't operate an active business. But it can be combined with a Panamanian corporation that does an active business. So if you want to create an active business corporation where the shareholders and owners are completely private that is within an asset protection structure, a Panamanian corporation and Panamanian foundation are probably going to be the most efficient and cost-effective ways to do it. It's not going to be as complete and or robust as a trust, and not going to have the same benefits, but it is going to be the best and most efficient way to hold an active business offshore if you don't want to get into the more complex Belize or Cook Islands trusts. Last, I'm going to just explain a couple of the terms. I know a lot of you are out there searching the web and looking into offshore asset protection. So I just want to explain three or four of the terms that you might come across. Just a second. So first is going to be a transfer clause. Some call it an escape clause. If you form a trust in one jurisdiction and you include a transfer or escape clause, if you come under duress, you're going to have the ability to move that trust out of that jurisdiction and into one that's more favorable to you. For example, some clients prefer to form a trust in Cayman Islands or Bahamas for whatever reason. Maybe their investment advisors are there, and Cayman Islands is certainly the largest offshore trust jurisdiction, mostly because that's where so much of the offshore hedge funds and investment funds are located. So it would be possible to form an offshore trust in Cayman Islands, put a transfer clause into that document, and then if it comes under duress, it could move to Belize or Cook Islands. So, if litigation was begun under Cayman Islands, the transfer clause would be invoked and the trust would move to a jurisdiction certainly more favorable, which might be Belize or Cook Islands, and then litigation would have to stop in Cayman and then begin again in Cook Islands. Purpose of this is to make litigation so costly that it's just not undertaken or it's used to force the settlement. Next term is Jones Clause. This is something that you really want to understand, and it's very simple, but it's something you need to understand when you're reading through the trust document that someone such as myself would have created for you. Basically, it says that it tells the trustee, the person managing the trust, that if a particular creditor obtains a judgment and comes calling, go ahead and pay him. It's typically used for U.S. clients who want and done to protect the client and the trustee, the trust manager, from fraudulent conveyance laws by allowing the trustee or requiring the trustee to pay certain creditors. For example, a foreign trust will almost always agree to pay the IRS in the Jones Clause. If you have tax problems, an offshore trust is probably not meant for you. If you do have a tax debt and the IRS comes and initiates activities, say, in Belize, the trustee in Belize is going to want to be able to get rid of that IRS creditor and to pay them. So the Jones Clause is put in for that purpose. Now, the same could be true. Remember, we've had this example a couple times of an automobile accident last week. You got into an automobile accident with Jim, and you want to create an offshore trust this week. Well, you could, and you could list Jim as a creditor that was to be paid through the Jones Clause. And this would mean that if Jim got a judgment and demanded payment from the offshore trust, the trust should pay him. Let's see, you've got a $2 million trust. Judgment is $100,000. The trust pays him the $100,000, and the trust is its legitimacy is still maintained. There's no fraudulent conveyance because of this Jones Clause. Letter of wishes. A letter of wishes is a way to deal with your estate and your beneficiaries, and it's a way of maximizing privacy. Now, in the U.S., a trust document typically lists everyone who gets, you know, who is your beneficiaries, what they get, and when they get it. An offshore trust can be done that same way. You could list all of your beneficiaries specifically in the trust document, spell out all of your wishes, and file that with the registrar. Well, you know, that some of that information could become public record. and it would be maintained at a government office. And if you wanted to make changes, it would be costly to amend your trust every time that you wanted to, you wanted to take out Kid 1, put in Kid 3, whatever it may be. It's going to be expensive and time-consuming and a pain in the butt to do it. A letter of wishes is a private communique between the settlor and the trustee that gives specific instructions to the trustee, telling him what to do, when, where, and how. And this letter of wishes is not part of the official trust document, so you can amend it at usually no cost by simply signing it, and FedExing it to the trustee. They put it in your file, and then if you pass away, they act upon it. They follow the instructions in that letter. And again, this letter can be changed as frequently as possible. And the persons listed in the letter of wishes are going to be private. When the letter of wishes is not going to be filed with any government agency, and the people, the beneficiaries listed in the letter of wishes, are not going to be required to prove up their identities at the time of filing or the time of creating the new letter. In other words, when you create a trust and you list someone specifically in the trust, let's say son one, that son is going to have to prove up their identity, notarize copies of passports, reference letters, all kinds of things, whereas if in the trust you just said, I leave my estate to my heirs and assigns as defined in my letter of wishes, that letter of wishes can be as specific and as you want and modified as frequently as you like. And maintain the privacy of those beneficiaries. Fraudulent conveyance is something that I've talked about a number of times in this presentation, so I'm just going to hit on it quickly here. An offshore trust has to be created and funded prior to a legal problem arising or a debt being incurred. So transferring money out of the U.S. to protect it from a known creditor or a reasonably known creditor is a fraudulent conveyance. If assets are transferred fraudulently, the settlor, you, can be held in contempt of court, held in jail, until those assets are returned. It is not a defense that the trustee, the person whom is managing the trust on your behalf, is refusing to return those, or that the trust itself is making it impossible for you to get to those assets. A judge can hold you in contempt until those assets are returned. As I said before, the best case scenario is that a trust is formed and funded 12 months before any problem arises. International asset protection takes a good amount of planning and foresight to maximize its value. Okay, and just one last note on why we do offshore asset protection is to maintain control. Offshore trusts allow the settlor to maximize privacy and asset protection while still maintaining control. This is something that is not available at any sense in the United States, and it also allows you to access international markets, multiple currencies, all types of different investments. And it also allows you to move your IRA or retirement account offshore and gain control and management of that in an international situation. So I thank you. I see that we have a couple minutes. We have 10 minutes exactly for questions. If you would like to, we'll form a line at the microphone over there, and we'll take them one at a time.